Media Network.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom. Here are your Roastmasters.
I don't have to worry about some things sometimes. What am I talking about?
I don't even know what that means.
I'm talking about Roger Ailes.
Dude, let me tell you what. Two guys died last night. One.
Amazing.
Kinda. I'm seeing on CNN that the Detroit police are calling it a suicide. And I'm just praying.
The performance, Chris, the performance wasn't that bad, really. Come on,
I saw a video, man. It was pretty good.
But not the hanging, I hope.
I'm just hoping it wasn't another fucking David Carradine. I swear to God, these guys are rich enough to hire somebody to strangle them while they're jerking off.
Could it have been Ailes?
No, you think Ailes did it? Ailes,
yeah.
And then
walked away. He had a secret. He had a secret life. So that's why it was like projecting all this other negativity.
So, okay, hold on. Let me paint the scenario.
I'm recording this part, though.
Oh, so am I. Fuck yeah, I am. So, Roger Ailes... Mm-hmm. On a covert op.
Yeah, it was in Detroit last night.
Sent by Rupert Murdoch to murder talent, I guess.
Chris was an amazing talent, but he wasn't really on top of the top of the charts or anything. I mean,
he's doing some cool acoustic shit. Temple of the Dogs going on tour again. He did that. One of my top five favorite Bond themes.
I know.
So Ailes strangles him to death, give or take, and then leaves, and due to the excitement, age, corpulence, and obesity, has a fucking heart attack himself.
Yes, slips and falls and dies. But how did that happen? How did that happen? He gets home, closes the door, he's back in Garrison, New York at his compound.
Hannity did it. That's why Hannity's on Twitter telling everybody to quit talking about it. Because he doesn't want to be found out that he murdered the fat man.
That's right. Because
he's actually, little boy.
He owed him. He's the pool boy.
He's little boy. Fat man and little boy. Except it's a bullshit bomb instead of an H bomb. See?
Roger. So how should we start this? How should we start the? This isn't. Oh, by the way. Oops. 3, 2. And we're back.
I am unaware of us being gone. So look, let me throw this out right at the top then, sir. 1-800-273-8255. For all the fun we poke, you know, Chris Connell was a suicide. Don't do that. Call for help. It's a suicide prevention hotline. 800-273-8255. Okay? If you go to Google and type it in, they have an online chat. Okay. If you go to Tumblr and type in suicide, it asks you, are you okay? Do you need to talk to somebody? When what you forgot to finish typing was girls, because I like tattooed girls with piercings. And Tumblr's all, you okay, dude? I'm like, shut up. Bring me the boobies. Because that's what keeps me from suicide.
Hot.
Something.
Hot.
So let me throw this up.
What next?
My headache, and okay. I only say this because she doesn't listen to the show, is about to become your headache on her way to become Seattle's headache. My wife left town about 20 minutes ago, headed to Seattle.
Okay.
She's taking her best friend up and dropping her off.
Okay.
It's either a kindness or a hazing. I'm not quite sure on the story, but I woke up this morning, and every morning I got to take my kid to school. She got a scholarship to a private school, a 40-minute drive from here. So every morning I got to get the kid to school at 8:30 in the morning. No, 8:10 in the morning. I usually get her there by 8:15. I don't know why. So that's my morning, and then I turn around and come home. I deal with the other kid, get that kid all up and ready for school. I homeschool the other kid. And then I got to turn around in the day, go back downtown, and then bring the kid back here. By that time, I'm in, you know, come home traffic, which for some reason, even though traffic into town is fucking icky, it's bad, it's even worse coming home. And we're in construction season. So I go out, I got my little Chevy Aveo. I don't know if you're familiar with this car. It is like a, it's like a car with no ass. It's a little four-cylinder beater. And I have a flat tire. And it's not just a low tire. It is flat. And there is junk in it. So I got to deal with that.
Now, not in the trunk, in the tire.
Right.
But you don't have Les Schwab, do you?
No, nah, big O. So my alternative vehicle is a late 80s Ford F-250 with the big 460 horsepower engine in it.
Nice.
Fucker gets 9 miles to the gallon. And of course, since Bren and her buddy are leaving town today, there are at least 3 to 4 hours of errands needing to be run. So in order to get them out of town, I had to burn through $30 worth of gas. Yeah. And then as I am finishing that up and I'm like, I got to go home and lay down for 5 fucking minutes. The school, my kid's school calls and says, hey, you're not supposed to send sick kids to school.
Oh, no.
To which I said, I know. But if she was here, she'd bug me and make me cook and stuff. So your problem. So I had to go and get her. But that, and this is the nutty part, and this is basically by way of apologizing to you, sir, that has been my easiest day this week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been kind of nuts.
Wow, I wouldn't even talk about easy it is. I mean, if I can get number two off to school at 8 o'clock because the bus just happens to show up right outside the front door.
Right.
He'll sometimes get up 7:15, 7:20, 7:25, 7:35. And then by that time, I know I have to drive him at least the half a mile to school because he's a sophomore. Okay. So eventually we'll get to the point where he'll walk home, maybe because the weather is better, but that's a whole other issue. I'm sure that'll get filtered back to him through his friends who listen to the show.
Sure.
Hint, 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 hint.
Hey, man, my kids walked back and forth to school until walking there would take longer than being there. that's a good measurement. That's a good rule of thumb, right?
Well, you walked all the time. I mean, but then again, that was the last century. So
uphill, both ways, in the snow, with constant fear of attack of polar bears and timber wolves.
And then we'd come home, and our fathers and mothers would beat us within an inch of our life, and then we'd have to go to sleep inside a shoebox in a small, shallow pond, and then go to work for 14, 15, 24,000 hours, and then come home, and then get killed again by mother and father, and then be stamping and stomping on top of our graves. Glory, hallelujah.
Okay. I was just about to do a whole thing about woolly mammoth attacks, but yours is good, too.
That's the Yorkshireman sketch from Python. Lovely sketch. Lovely. In fact, the story about that sketch is that it is so old, it even predates Python by a couple of years when they were in a different troupe or two before Python started. But that's neither here nor there. So I had – so flip of the coin. Do you who goes first this week? And what do you have, Jeff?
No, you go. I went first last week.
Okay. Flip of the coin. I had a whole script. I had everything all set up this morning happened, and I just went and ripped it up.
Okay.
Okay. Ripped it up. And
which thing this morning?
It was a hell of a morning. Hell of a morning. Because generally what I don't like to do, and I do it, and it's a very, very bad habit, when I open up my eyes, first thing, it just like I'm Mr. Magoo. I can't see a flipping thing. Okay. And so I pick up my phone, I look at it, and then on the Twitter it says, Roger Ailes, 77, is dead.
Woo-hoo.
And I was just like, oh, jeez, fuck, really? And it was just like, first thing is, don't Twitter, don't write anything, not until you have your first cup of coffee. You know, and I wrote something and I saw I had two periods after what I wrote instead of one. So
you. Lesson you learned. Rampant punctuation anarchist.
Well, I was going to talk today about the negative influence of what Fox News did, and then eventually what it became was a company called Sinclair that started taking over a bunch of stations nationally.
I know Sinclair.
A local change, Fisher Broadcasting.
Fisher Broadcasting.
But I decided to rip all that shit up.
So to interrupt, basically, Roger Ailes died of precognition shame knowing that you were going to talk about the mess he made in America.
Thank God. Thank God. It's listened. He finally paid attention to listen. But
it's like killing Hitler Jr.
Yeah. Oh, his junior? His son? Zachary?
No, I'm saying Hitler. Hitler Jr. Or Goebbels Jr., really, wasn't it?
Goebbels Jr.
Was it Himmler?
Jabba the Hutt. Leah finally found the chain and choked Jabba. So that's kind of on his pleasure ship. I thought that was a really good one. All the skirts at Fox News.
And now we're back to autoerotic asphyxiation all over again.
We're back again.
Come on.
Apparently, if we just want to start this whole thing off. This was a note from written by his wife, and it kind of goes like this. It goes,
Roger was a loving husband to me, his son Zachary, and a loyal friend to many. He passed away this morning after getting out of bed and tripping over a block of cheese, which he keeps by the bed to eat. His pants ripped and one of his balls flopped out, and he stepped in his own sack and howled in pain. This caused a honey jar to fall off a shelf and land on his head. When he tried to pry the honey jar off his head, he stumbled backward and landed in an empty barrel, causing his ass to get stuck. Now flailing wildly, his hand somehow became lodged in a pickle jar. Finally, Roger fell out of an open window and dropped to his death 3 stories below. And so, even as we mourn his death, we celebrate his life. Elizabeth Ailes.
But that was in a Twitter post. And I noticed that you had shared it. So I decided you had.
I like... I like that he simultaneously had one ball flop out and then stepped on it.
Mother said, when someone dies, always have something good to say. So say, good, he's dead.
There you go. Look, I will make no mistake, brother. It's when Jerry Falwell died, good. Good, good, good. The world is better off without him. You know, Roger Ailes, good. I don't give a fuck how sad Sean Hannity is. Good. I'm glad he's dead.
I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
I'm just getting started.
Okay, on.
This is short. I mean, I won't be filling up the entire 13-minute. You know, the FCC required, you know, a portion of, you know, my part here. But, you know, it's like it's going to be – it's the briefer the obituary, the better. So I saw this from Pam Vogel in Media Matters, and it went like, quote, he went out in such a sad way, but who doesn't have sins? We all have our sins. We all have our cross to bear. And that's how Fox News' Ainsley Earnhardt addressed the death of former Fox CEO Roger Ailes on Fox and Friends this morning. A few hours later, Fox News' Happening Now co-anchor John Scott similar said of Ailes, yes, we all had his... Excuse me. Yes, he had his faults. We all do. I'm sorry, Scott and Earnhardt. Okay, I didn't have, or Jeff, you didn't have his faults.
Okay.
Roger Ailes hurt women, a lot of women.
Yeah.
Probably more than we know. And if those facts are lost in praise about the way Ailes forever changed the political and media landscape or reduced it to kind of a sad ending to an incredible career, it will be another message that those women don't matter. In addition to the incalculable damage Ailes' signature creation has done to the political landscape in this country, his real legacy is the pain that he caused for countless people. The 25 women who reported, okay, who knows how many more, his sexual misconduct and harassment, the employees who were silenced or surveilled by Ailes and his cronies, the women and black employees who were serially serially harassed by others under Ale's watch, the surely many more Fox employees who went to work every day, scared, the viewers who watched harassers deliver the news each day with Ale's stamp of approval, and the survivors who hear the stories about Ale's serial harassment and are reminded of their own pain. These are not sins that we have committed, that we have all committed. These are atrocities. Ale's real legacy is the message that if you're wealthy, powerful white man, you can hurt as many people as you want and probably get away with it. You could do it for decades, building up an environment where no one even talks about the pain you cause. And when women speak up, you can spy on them, dismiss them, harass them. And when people listen to those women, despite your best efforts to stop them, you can walk away with a tarnished legacy and an extra $40 million. That's Pam Vogel in Media Matters. But to a greater extent, Isaac Chuffnir in Slate. Isaac, if I mispronounced your name, I apologize.
You know he's listening.
We all live in the world Roger Ailes broke. All right, here we go. Roger Ailes, the former head of the Fox News Channel, passed away at the age of 77. It was announced by a statement that I just read. Okay. She wrote that, quote, his work in entertainment, in politics, in news, affected the lives of many millions. This is true. Ailes leaves behind one of the largest legacies of any media figure of the past century. He made our country nastier, stupider, cruder, more bigoted. Even as the memory of Ailes, the man, fades, we will always be able to look back on what he built. When Rupert Murdoch hired Ailes in 96 to create Fox News as an alternative to the mainstream media, Murdoch's intention was clear. He wanted to degrade American society in precisely the same way that he had degraded British society, and before that, Australian society. And when degradation is your goal, there is no better hire than Roger Ailes. Ailes was a political aide turned television, and I'm not even going to use this word because he used genius all the time. Television, what do you call it? You know, evil personality who emanated anger. His crucial insight was that there was a great amount of money to be made off the resentments of others. The rot of ill will, Jeff. And the more that you could stoke those resentments, the more money you could earn. At the same time, you could increase the net amount of your resentment and create a coarser society, all the better for your own pocketbook. But Ailes was not some phony elitist playing a con on the rubes. No, he really loved degrading people, and he held the same resentments as the pathetic viewers whose worlds he manipulated. Indeed, one of the special things about Ailes was the depth of his hatred and the broad-ranging reach of his racism. Some bigots confined their disgust to a single group or religion. Ailes, however, was never so limited. Who did the man dislike? Muslims. Check. Black Americans? Check. Jews? Uh-huh. Hispanics? Yes. Fox, under Ailes' leadership, became a leader in spewing all these different forms of bigotry. He was a visionary. Ailes also took special interest in the careers of much of the female talent at Fox News. His leadership style was to sexually harass female employees and ensure a grotesque environment at the network, which nicely mimicked the misogyny Fox viewers could see on their television screens every day. Elizabeth Ailes' statement, recalling the millions of lives her husband affected, calls to mind Stalin's line about one death being a tragedy and millions of deaths being a mere statistic. Ailes' family and friends should never forget that their beloved Roger ruined individual lives too. It is sometimes said that during a period of mourning that we should focus on the life rather than the death. Now, who could agree in this cause? And who could agree or disagree in this case? There will be other Roger Ailes, men of low character and morals, who don't care about the society they help destroy and the lives that they help wreck, who don't give a second thought to the victims of their petty prejudices and vomit-inducing sexual desires. But by ensuring that his id was available on television every night for millions of viewers, Ailes helped elect a president remarkably similar to himself, thus permanently enshrining his legacy. Ailes may be resting in peace, I certainly hope not. The rest of us live in the decidedly non-Pacific world that he helped create. And with that in mind, in closing, sir, in closing, from Jill Lepore in The New Yorker, nothing could be more natural than a man like Ailes, who would attempt to dictate his place in history. And nothing could be more unavailing. History is the shadow cast by the dead. So long as there's light, the shadow will fall. And that, I hand it back to you.
Well, all right. let's take a quick break, and we come back. I got my thing.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests. Good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The Coffee Cast podcast.
All right. In 1840, we took a little trip with... No, that's the different one. Are you familiar with that song?
Yes,
I am. 1830, we took a little trip.
Did you know it, Tyler, too?
To the mighty Mississippi, which is my second favorite Civil War song, the first one being Goober Peas. Are you familiar with Goober Peas?
Goober and the Bees, yeah.
Peas, eating goober peas. Goodies are delicious. Eating goober peas. One of the first songs I learned how to play on the banjo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. When you learn how to play the banjo, there's not a lot of cool shit. They're not covering, you know, Steve Martin's King Tut. So,
yeah, but you can't be unhappy playing banjo, that's for sure.
Oh, you can. Yes, sir, you can.
You mean sorrowful? You mean like...
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Oh, wow.
It's nutty, but you could do it. Anyway, so in 1840, Harvard University... Harvard, got to say that with your teeth shut.
Harvard. You're going up to Harvard Yard.
With the first school, at least in these United States, to offer loans to students to help pay for their attendance to their fine and August University there in Cambridge. Next up, 1867, the United States Department of Education was formed to help make schools more successful. But it did not yet have a student loan program, right? 1944, the GI Bill passed, allowing World War II veterans to attend college for free or very inexpensive. And in subsequent years, veterans would account for nearly half of those attending college. Half. 1958, federal student loans are first offered. Now, see, this is new. 1958 was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things, especially in American history.
Administration.
Yeah, seriously, you know, if you're going to go back to, like, you know, the Greek or Roman times. But it was 1958 under the National Defense Education Act to help the United States compete with other countries, namely Soviet Union.
Because of the Sputnik.
Yeah, you betcha. High school students who showed promise in math, science, engineering, foreign language, or those who wanted to be teachers were offered grants, scholarships, and loans. 1965, the Higher Education Act was established to provide educational opportunity grants to colleges recruiting students with considerable financial need. The Guaranteed Student Loan Program, also known as the Federal Family Education Loan Program, or FFELP.
Yep, just a couple of letters shy.
FFELP.
Of that other word.
FFELP.
I need somebody. FFELP. Not oh, there just you go. Anybody.
See, I went the other direction, as I am still paying off my student loans. That one allowed banks, private institutions to provide government-subsidized and guaranteed loans to students. National Association of Financial Aid Administrators was created to monitor financial aid in 1966. In 1972, the Basic Educational Opportunity Grant, what would end up being the Pell Grant, was created to help needy folks attend college, which, as I personally know, that was 45 years ago. Because that was when I was born, 1972. Now, 1992, Higher Education Amendments created FAFSA.
Yes.
To attach to FFELP. Anyway, basically. Unsubsidized Stafford loans. That's where I got into trouble. Student Loan Reform Act in 1993 mandated the direct lending program. This one belonged to Clinton. This way, the government directly lends to borrowers as opposed to just private institutions. 2005, Higher Education Reconciliation Act reduced loan fees from 4% to 1% to allow graduate students to take out PLUS loans. Okay? That was a bushy. Credit market problems in 2008 caused private lenders to back out of FFELP because they couldn't provide loans to students. In 2010, legislation proposed under the Obama administration eliminates FFELP and requires all federal loans, all new ones, to be direct loans. Private lenders began offering private student loans to students independently from the government. 2012, the total amount of student loan debt in the United States of America passed $1 trillion. Aha, you say. Aha. It's
and
huge.
I actually have my own student loan poverty story myself. But
sure.
This is your part.
Yeah, we'll do that in the wrap-up. Because I as well, and I'll tell you about it because it's a goddamn travesty is what it is. So here we sit with over $1 trillion and a couple of things happened in the last day and a half. And so I'm bringing this up, because I don't want it getting lost in special prosecutors, Trumpisms, and other marches to our own Armageddon. But the, Betsy DeVos, billionaire private school Walmart Academy wannabe funder, has decided to attempt to murder the student loan forgiveness program.
Jesus God.
As part of the plan to slash the Department of Education's budget by $10.6 billion, the Post reported that the White House will propose ending the federal student loan forgiveness program for public sector and nonprofit workers, and then lengthen the amount of times Americans will have to spend repaying their debts on income-based plans if they borrowed to get an advanced degree. Under the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which the administration's budget would reportedly kill off, student borrowers can currently have their debts erased if they spend 10 years working for a government or nonprofit employer. The program was created in 2007, again, Bushy, in order to encourage more Americans to go into public service, but has become a controversial issue, as a lot of people have criticized it as a backdoor subsidy for expensive graduate degrees. Boy, you think that's Republicans, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Subsidy, et cetera, et cetera?
And paymasters.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
You should do what we're going to tell you.
Well.
You're going to rip that portion out. You're going to gut it. We're going to stuff your pockets. We're just going to march you off to Washington, and you're going to make sure that you're going to rip that.
Right. Anyway, as we watch the Trump administration with everything else that's a problem, it's important to keep in mind as we watch these small slights and attacks on, well, I guess the word I want to use is people, us being people, You've got this. You've got net neutrality that's going to take a hit. The patient's bill of rights will disappear. All sanity and decorum is gone already, of course. But the PSLF program, as it's called, is kind of fucked up. But a lot of well-paid doctors who work at nonprofit hospitals are set to benefit from it, which I don't really have a problem with. They're doctors. And I know that they will end up making a shit ton of money, but they're not fixing my car. They're fixing people. You kind of deserve to make a shitload of money when you cut people into pieces. You know, I feel the same way about a lot of other specialties, like teaching. But the Government Accountability Office suggested that 25% of Americans who work in jobs that could qualify for the program, but only a few hundred thousand people have submitted certification paperwork for the program. So, yeah, it's a cool program. And, yeah, Trump's trying to cancel it, but it turns out not a lot of people are doing very much with it. But for what it's worth, the GAO has suggested that Obama's plan to cap the program would have saved about $6.7 billion, and that eliminating it would save more. Which brings us back to the balance, especially with Republicans, and more sinister in form, intent, and speech, are libertarians, to where we look at the community model of how the United States of America is, in my humble opinion, designed to operate. It is one for all and all for one. We help each other. We, when needed, are supposed to tug our neighbors up by their bootstraps. If indeed they own boots at all, or have bootstraps, because those, I think, went out of style well or before just, 1900 rolled around.
Or just grab the Chucks, the Chuck Taylors by the sides and yank. Sure.
We're supposed to help each other out. We're supposed to look out for one another. There was the old axiom how a citizen of Rome could walk any road in the empire without fear of molestation, knowing that if something were to happen to them, that the might of the Holy Roman Empire would crash down upon that area in specific and wipe it from the face of the fucking earth. Americans don't have that anymore. If anything, if you find yourself gazing upward, your view of the sky obscured by the bottom of a bus, chances are it's your neighbor that threw you there. If for no other reason, then maybe one day you had something better than they had. And they want to make sure you know your place. It's two people standing in a pile of shit all the way up to their waist, looking at a third guy standing in a pile of shit up to his knees, who are livid that he is not standing in as much shit as they are, to which the third guy says, maybe it's more important to wonder why we're all standing in piles of shit. Because that's where we are right now. We have billionaires trying to tell me what the fuck the American experience is supposed to be. We have billionaires that want to make billions of dollars for the descendants of the Walton family to make money on academies that churn out retail-ready graduates. That's not the pride that I grew up with. That is not the reason I flew flags on my fucking vehicles long before terrorists decided to fly airplanes into tall buildings. My patriotism comes from the stories that were told to me and handed to me through the generations of my family who ran away from Scotland to Holland and then had to run away from Holland to here. And I watch every day of those things that I took pride in growing up and knowing full well, and I say that knowing that my first memory of a president was Ronald Reagan, and for all the ill that that guy did, whether it be crazy people dumped out on the streets or the mass firing of people that were basically landing our airplane safely, wanting to make enough money to pay their fucking rent and feed their families. Even with that, there was a pride in being American that was dying, and it was dying quickly, and no one could see it because it was an internal bleeding of a death. I take it back to basically between 1955 and 1965, where we got a little secret and then we got more secret. And when I hear people talk about, and this is a wild one, you're just going to have to jump on and take on the ride with me, Tommy. But
all right.
When you look at the Gulf of Tonkin resolve, right? It was a completely fabricated attack. in which a country that could do no damage to us did no damage to us and took our covert war of sending special forces in with the Hmong, you know, and the South Vietnamese and turned it into a fully overt war. And it's funny to me, if you'll go back and look at history, how the United States of America, when we decided to finally declare hot and heated war based on an attack that just happened, had a whole shitload of fully functional Air Force bases already in country and built. See?
What a quinkydink.
Yeah. And you look at that secret, that secrecy and that secretism, starting with Kennedy. I mean, going back in the paranoia, but that was JFK, and it was blown further out of proportion by Lyndon Baines Johnson, both
crazy, supposed crazy, to be crazy with paranoia, and incapable of stopping the train.
But they were supposed to be our liberal icons. They were supposed to be those people that sat at the top of our fucking Camelot towers and told us what was good for the future of America. And their overt ways were, and their covert ways have caused problems. And that led to Nixon letting his paranoia run him nuts, which led to the religious right and Ralph Reed, which led to Ronald Reagan, which led to Newt Gingrich, which Good led Bush. To Tom DeLay, you know, and you take Tom DeLay to Denny Hastert. These all set the tone to give us a George W. Bush.
And Cheney.
Democrats made a squawk, got a black feller elected, right? And then immediately abandoned the guy until it was time for his reelection, believing that we had solved the world's problems with the election of someone different than those that came before. And when he needed the support, he didn't have it. And what do we get for that? What do we get for our abandonment of Trump. What could have been a nearly progressive, almost liberal president had he just had some backup? We end up with what Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch and the rest of those chuckleheads built for us, and that is the extremely shrill, uneducated, paranoid, delusional, piece of shit, narcissistic Cheeto that is currently occupying the Oval Office at the White House. All in a line, back to stupid decisions made once they ran Truman out of office. And you may not like Truman, and Truman was kind of he's an acquired taste. He's still one of my favorite presidents for all of his ills and warts. But the end of the Truman administration marked the path to me, just as a student of history, that led us here to where we can look at the children of America and as they are coming up, and for the first time, this generation is being openly and actively targeted for the dumbing down by those who want a retail-ready economy/workforce. There's no other reason to take away anything that has loan forgiveness to do with higher education for children than knowing that to keep them ignorant and to keep them frothy-mouthed and to keep them paranoid is the quickest, easiest way for us to have an oligarchy and a ruling class in exactly the opposite of all of the American traditions that we supposedly feel proud of. And when I put a sticker on my car with an American flag, I know that it's for a dream that is currently being held, as it was so aptly put by that Republican poster boy, underwater, drowned in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. We are at that point. The United States government is supposed to be an institution that embraces everyone, that everyone has access to, that any American can use to both help themselves, their neighbors, their friends, their communities, their states, and their country in every direction, both up and down. If you have taken, you should give. If you have given, you can take if needed. That is supposed to be the Zen of America. And instead, it's fuck you, I got mine. Get a better job. How do I get a better job? Get a better education. How do I get a better education? You borrow money at a size and a rate you will never be able to pay back, and that now the ruling class in America that has the White House, the Congress, and the judiciary is saying it needs to be even harder for you to break the shackles of retail servitude because that's all we are. We are indentured.
And make it even worse, even make it more difficult to vote. By making it difficult to vote, fewer people vote. The fewer people that do usually vote are usually Republican. Fewer people that usually vote reestablish Republicans back into power, thereby perpetuating the same bullshit.
Because stabbing your neighbor in the back is apparently patriotism now. Making sure that other people have it worse than you is patriotism in America now. And let me put it this way. As I have children that are nearing their college age, the best thing I can do for them is to stay so dirt fucking poor that they have to have access to grants. Because if we only have access to loans, it will bankrupt me and I will die in penury. And I'll tell you right now, as I close off my chunk of this show, that if Trump manages to escape impeachment in the next 6 months, because if we don't get him in the next 6 months, we will never have a chance for impeachment. But if we don't get him in the next 6 months, if he manages to skate away, and I think that it is highly possible that he will, the idea of a debtor's prison will occur as though the Lord himself spat it in his ear to Jeff Sessions. Again, a guy, by the way, with a huge financial investment in private prisons.
Jesus God.
But a debtor's prison, that can easily come back. So you have a car accident, your insurance won't pay for everything that it costs to keep you and or a family member alive. Well, put your shit in storage because you got to go to prison to be in debt. So how about now we take a quick break and we get back on the other side. We can talk about lessons that we have learned. Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
I don't mind laundry noises. They're fine. They're honest noises. They are the noises of the hoi polloi, the vox populi washing their clothes. The river washers, they should be singing a spiritual.
That's right. To me, I see them as the flotsam and jetsam of life's rich pageant.
I'm just happy my kids are doing their fucking chores. So, Tom, sir.
Yes. Yes, sir. What do we take away from today?
Well, I'll start and reflect, if I may, on the good news, bad news of the day. And the better news would have been had Roger Ailes succumbed to what will probably be his corpulence. I mean, that dude's been carrying around a 9-inch chin for so long that there's probably a cardiologist somewhere surprised it took this long. But unless he was actually murdered, perhaps by the ghost of David Carradine.
It could be.
I don't know. Now it's all autoerotic asphyxiation.
He slipped
jokes.
And fell and bled, and he was a hemophiliac. And, you know, that happened. And it was most unfortunate for his surviving family, or depending. But for the rest of us.
Did he treat the women in his family better than he treated the women in his workday?
Jesus, he just didn't even. He went through three. You know, I don't know what his wife knew. I don't know.
I mean, that's just what it comes down to me is it's like. I've told this story on the Left Show several times. I once attended a non-ironic event hosted by the Sutherland Institute out here in Utah, which I believe is a subsidiary of one of the national dipshit think tanks, Home and Hearth, or you know, White Americans Against Everybody, Not Us. But
Hearthkin.
Probably. But anyway, it was a non-ironic event in which Newt Gingrich, already on to his third wife, came to Utah and told a room with several hundred Mormon Republicans all about what family values mean.
Oh,
no shit.
Oh.
And one of the points that he made, a salient point that he pulpit pounded about, was, hey, why do we take receipts from the gas pumps at the gas station? We don't need them. You shouldn't. Why do we take? We take because we like free stuff. Because that's. And then he went on and on about welfare reform. Ironically, jeez. Not ironically, coincidentally enough, about 3 or 4 months ago, I got pulled over after a fill-up, in which the officer was like, "You stole gas." I said, "I sir, certainly did not." And they're like, "Well, we saw you on the video. You put in the gas. You drove off." Now, one, as you full well know, you really can't do that anymore. Two, I had my receipt. And I showed it to him. I said, "Here you go. Here's my receipt for all that gas." And he said, "Oh, sorry. Must have been a different car." Got in his car and left me alone. So
Jesus, no.
I ignored the dipshit advice of Newt Gingrich and kept myself from getting arrested for something I didn't do. I have foiled your plan, Mr. Gingrich. And I can hear you chuckling
grifters,
from your moon base.
One of the biggest grifters in American political history.
Mm-hmm.
The king of grift.
Tell you one more thing as I wrap this up. One of the reasons that I hate Newt Gingrich as much as I do, because it came out of his fucking fat face, his blivet of a head.
Blivet.
He has postponed moon bases for at least 4 to 5 decades.
Fuck is
because
wrong,
it comes out of his fat head. Yes, blivet. Do you guys look it up? I will tell you what it means if you need to know. But yeah, because he said it, and because anything that falls out of his head is so risible that we can't have that for decades. And moon bases would be totally fucking awesome. And I have a feeling that had we gotten even George fucking Bush to say it, the W's, we'd have a much better shot had Newt Gingrich not opened his mouth and said, "We're going to a moon base." And they're like, "What? How many mistresses are you going to keep there, dummy? Or is that where you're going to send the old wives?"
Let's examine the 1/6 gravity of the moon and sexual congress.
Oh my God, he was doing it because he needed a hump place. All right.
That's right.
Ew.
The is an impossible trident, Jeff, and also known as an impossible fork, a blivet, a devil's tuning fork. It's a drawing of an impossible object, an undecipherable figure, a kind of a optical illusion you see three times, yet it's only connected to two.
No.
Blivet.
A blivet.
And that's exactly
a blivet
what is
2 pounds of shit in a 1 pound bag. That's what a blivet is. It's my definition is a military phrase. Whereas, we're in the middle of a blivet here. It's 2 pounds of shit in a 1 pound bag. That's all.
So, and my takeaway is, let's look at it this way, from what we have learned today. Ailes died alone. He lost the love of his life, that's his network, and the affection of his third wife. I will not wish him rest in peace. The agency of Ailes was cruelty. Ailes ignited nightmares and division and hatred and gave no peace to humanity. And I say hell had a vacancy. And that is the legacy of Roger Ailes. I can't get back the friends that I lost. Once the friends started listening to the Limbaughs and the Fox Newses, maybe it was inevitable. Maybe there was going to be some kind of cleaving or division. Something was going to happen. I can't get them back. I've always held in great resentment what the conservative media has done and how it has poisoned minds, if it's not just my late father, the friends that I had, the friends that I thought I used to have. It's happened to every single one of us. I had done an interview with the great Jen Senko, who created the documentary, The Brainwashing of My Dad. And only until they took the remote out of Dad's hand and reprogrammed the TV,
yep,
did he change and got back to the kindly person that he was before he died. And to me, that is something that we are going to have to live with for the rest of our lives, because this is a perpetual motion machine. I am so fucking happy that Fox is in third fucking place and they're still like spinning yarns about things that don't even matter. They're making shit up as they always have. They are the rot and ruin, Jeff. They are, to me, founded upon a non-truth, a lie. And so that is the rot. That is the lie. They're built upon that, and forever they will fail, or they will forever have negativity, because when you are built upon untruth, you will fail. And to me, that is the one thing I think of them.
That's heavy stuff, man.
I'm fucking pissed.
You're a heavy thinker with your heaviness.
I hate what they have done. I don't have hate in my heart for him. I fucking pity that somebody has missed it in life, and yet they've created such destruction. All the shit, the W's, the Trumps, all the shit. What it takes to overcome this shit, you know, that we have to live with. Yeah, and you talk about the student loan thing. I mean, when I came out, I was making like $10,000 a year. I still had a year and a half left, and I was making for about 4 or 5 years about $10,000 a year. And I had about at least $500 a month I had to pull out of my pocket somewhere and send in, because not only did I default on a student loan, but I had other loans that I still had to pay. Yeah, it's my responsibility. Yeah, I decided to go to an expensive school, but yeah, I wanted to get the kind of education and training that would have really, really mattered. And when I see what they have done, it is indeed what they want to do, is just create a slave class that is just a slave to the loans that they have created, or just keep them in that place and the wealthy will have the rest. And that's the other thing, what Ailes and those people have done is to perpetuate that has come from the very, very beginning. There are the mercenaries, those who will take everything, and then there's the peasantry, the rest of us. And the promise of America was the equality, the even, the fair shake, the square deal between us all, that we could just live, get along, look out for each other, and have a chance at things.
I have the sad. It may just be that I'm tired, but I got the sad. All right, well, hey, I tell you what, let's go out on a high note. Why do cows have hooves?
Why?
Because they lack toes.
Oh my God, Jeff, that's just awesome.
Lactose. Huh?
Yes.
You
lactose.
With me?
All right, well, that's just another wonderful roast in the can. Stay tuned for next time when Jeff and I will be back. Talk to you later, Jeff.
See you later, buddy. Thanks.
The most powerful name in news. just pulled that shit out of their ass. You know who else was also fucking responsible for that shit?
What?
You ever hear of the agency MVBMS or Messner, Vetteray, Berger, Schmetterer? They're the ones who used to have Volvo back in the day, way back like 70s to 80s or something.
Right, right.
Tom Messner was member. He was in the Tuesday the Tuesday group, the group that did the ads for Reagan, you know, him and Hal Reiney and those guys. And he sat in, and Messner's buddy was Ailes. And so they came up with, you know, the most powerful name in news and all the other shit that, you know, that, yeah, the fair and balanced shit. Yeah, so Ailes had some help from some real ad people.
No doubt about that, because that's, you know what, that's what gives people like you and I a bad name, as far as our ad experience goes. Oh, you do that? No, I'm not one of them. I'm one of the good ones.
The way I